Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. Coming up this hour of the program, the author of This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All.
Excuse me. What are you doing? Yeah, you. Were you just putting that book away? It looked like you were just putting that book away. I guess you didn't know we have a system for putting books away here. No, I'm curious. You were just randomly putting that book on the shelf. Is that it? You've just given us a great idea. I mean, why are we wasting our time with the Dewey Decimal System when your system is so much easier, much easier? We'll just put the books anywhere. Hear that, everybody? Our friend here has given us a great idea. We'll just put the books any damn place we choose. We don't care, right? Isn't that right?
You haven't taken a break all morning.
And who knew there was so much librarian humor? But there is. Joining us this hour of the program, actually that's a clip from Party Girl, and joining us this hour is Marilyn Johnson, who's the author of This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Her bio says that she, Marilyn, owns multiple library cards and uses them often. She's a staff writer for Life, and she specialized in, well, she was a staff writer, and she specialized in writing obituaries of celebrities who weren't quite dead. Her first book, The Deadbeat, Lost Souls, Lucky Stiffs, and the Perverse Pleasures of Obituaries, was a Borders Original Voices selection and a finalist for the Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers Award. She lives in New York with her husband and family, and she's with us this hour of the program. We're welcoming phone calls, as we always do. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure, Kathleen.
You don't normally think of librarians as being humorous places, but your book is very funny and not entirely, but it's funny. You even find humor in obituaries. You find the most fascinating people in libraries. We're overlooking them, Marilyn.
It was the most surprising finding in my 3 years of research was how funny these people are. They delighted me.
I know they did, and you found them all over, and they're really delightful characters. Why have we overlooked them? I mean, you must say, when I'm thinking about a subject for a book, it's interesting that you chose this one because you found this whole world below the surface and below a stereotype that we have of librarians.
Well, you know, librarians are, they're wonderfully modest, and they want to be of service to their patrons.
Mm-hmm.
They don't put themselves out front. They don't push their personality in your face, and they don't rush to tell you about themselves. They are reticent, I guess, and that has led to a whole feeling that they're, you know, shushing creatures who are actually kind of creepy.
Right.
Couldn't be further from the truth. They're just very discreet.
Couldn't be further. And is it really true that you found when you were doing these obituaries that some of the most fascinating people you were writing about were dead librarians?
Oh, yes.
Really?
And well, here was the interesting thing. I couldn't tell you if somebody said, oh, there's a fascinating obituary of a librarian in the newspaper today, I couldn't tell you whether that librarian would be somebody who had taught every child in her town how to sail, or it was somebody who had taken a card catalog and figured out how to make it an automated database.
Mm.
You know, they were spanning the world. If librarians are interested in a subject, they become experts at it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they're very interested in the real world. It's you can't predict what you would find.
No, you can't at all. And tell me about this interest. It was related, wasn't it, to your first book about obituaries?
Well, I, of course, read thousands of obituaries while I was researching The Deadbeat. And I kept coming across, I ended up having a special file of librarian obituaries and obituaries of archivists. And it seemed to me, as I was reading them, I was not only fascinated by each of their lives, but I saw that they were on the frontier of a whole revolution in information, and that the ones who were really thinking in a visionary way were really reinventing the field. And I thought, well, my own information experience is being revolutionized. I have, you know, in my life spanned everything from dial-up phones to multiple devices that seem to sense messages in the air. I wonder if I sat behind a librarian's desk, how really much more fascinating and multiplutinous is not a word, but
it should be. I like it.
It should be. Yes. Why aren't they drowning in information and information delivery systems?
Right. You know, when you were talking about dial-ups, I even remember the days of party lines, and I was thinking as you were talking, I wish we could return to those. Those were fun. You know, those were really fun.
We have, in a way. We have the little Skype parties online.
Oh.
If you don't have a teenager.
I do have a teenager, but we don't have a Skype. Yeah. We've got everything else, though, Marilyn. We are plugged in. We are tuned in to everybody, it seems. I can't keep track of it. We're texting at the same time we're doing a video game and talking to Mom. It's quite a feat.
It's interesting. And you talk to a tech-savvy librarian, and they are on the cutting edge. They are telling you about the new e-readers, and they are helping you figure out how to sync your devices. I mean, my eyes were opened by standing around the reference desk and chatting up librarians.
And tell me about the transition, because you tend to think of librarians, which really isn't true. They are on the cutting edge of all this technology. You think about them being immersed in books and immersed in the past and immersed in history. But what you just said is very interesting. They can guide you through all of this technical stuff.
I have so much admiration for these people. They have one foot planted firmly in those wonderful values and that embrace of a literate culture that hangs on to its history and preserves all the good things in one place. And then they have the other foot, you know, leaning into the future and saying, well, let's figure out how we can make this useful to all these books, how we can make this useful to our mission as useful librarians.
And tell me about the information that you've been able to receive from librarians. You've wanted to save, see, you're several steps ahead of me on all of this, certain web pages or print some web pages. Well, how did you need the help of librarians for technological advancement?
I was trying to do research on the web about obituaries. And at a certain point, I realized that, you know, just clipping things from newspapers wasn't working. I could read newspaper obituaries from around the world. And I started trying to save them in files. And things are so advanced now. There are so many jumping graphics that come out at you from these newspaper web pages that I was crashing my word processing program.
No.
Whenever I tried to save them. And I was weeping about this, you know, not literally, but, you know, whining about it to my friendly librarians. And they said, well, wait a minute, why don't you just pull down this little option up here, the file option, and see where it says save as web page? If you click that, your computer will take a picture of
Ta-da.
The page. Oh, my goodness. My life changed.
Right. Don't you love those kinds of moments?
Yes, aha. Uh-huh.
One of those aha. And did you reward the librarian in any way? A cup of coffee?
I wrote
sweet
a book
roll?
About her.
You wrote a book about her. Oh, that's even better. That's great. You start this book in, where the heck is it? Deadwood? Is that the name of it? Deadwood,
yes.
South Dakota.
Yes.
Which is, you know, you present this fascinating image of what's going on historically in that town and how the the library is saving. Well, tell the story of how they're preserving the whole history of the place.
Well, here's this little town that if you took away its history, it would be nothing. It would be nowhere. It's a little town in South Dakota. They do historic reenactments. They have, you know, Annie Oakley buried up in the, and Wild Bill Hickok buried up in the cemetery. Everything turns around 100 years ago. And the library, which coincidentally was built about 100 years ago, it's not just any public library. They do all the things a public library does, but they do something that more and more town libraries are doing, and that is they're capturing the local history and preserving it. So they're a combination of library and archive, and they just do a brilliant job of taking these old newspapers that day by day tell the history of the Wild West and make them accessible to researchers, to people who want to read them online, and to people in the town.
Hmm. Isn't that a wonderful way to put it, that they are what they were? We all are, really.
They are what they were.
They really are what they were.
That's... They've got the beating heart of that town, you know, perfectly preserved.
Right.
It's wonderful.
And you also tell us about the personality of the librarian there.
Oh, she's, you know, she, I describe her as being something of a blur because she's doing 900 different tasks simultaneously and with great competency. I mean, it's very impressive. But she's greeting people, she's doing searches, she's organizing and ordering material. She's preserving this stuff. She's throwing readings and welcoming visiting writers. It's not a big staff. It's her and two part-time people.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Everything but, you know, washing the floors. So my hat's off to her. And I thought it was very interesting that that there was a virtual reality site that had a virtual Deadwood with a virtual librarian staffing its stacks too. And I the coincidence of having Deadwood be a living place, that's interesting. Deadwood was a living place where the library, the ethics of a librarian were being played out in a particularly marvelous way. And then there was this wild, weird, almost cartoon-looking Deadwood that existed, where an idea of a library in the future used that same name to bring services to avatars.
What a world. Whoa.
Yeah.
Let's welcome phone calls for you. We'll take them in just one moment. Our guest this hour is the author of This Book Is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. It's been getting rave reviews, and it really breaks down all of the cliches and stereotyping we have about librarians. They are techies in many ways, and they are people who respect the power of the word and the fact that when you go to, we have to talk about censorship, et cetera, and the woman who started the Banned Books Week, but how they've taken on the FBI as well, the Patriot Act as well, because when you go to a library, you're there to form your opinions and learn about things, and essentially it's a private thing, and it should remain a private endeavor. But they will go public in their right to defend that private endeavor. 800-486-8655 is the number. 2 year calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now, starting with Frank from Madison. Hello, Frank.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Frank.
Superb guest.
Great.
And, you know, parenthetically, Desk Set is a great librarian's movie, too.
Desk Set? Okay.
Yes.
But,
yes. Katharine Hepburn.
But there's an extremely interesting thing that happened. Librarians have a great sense of mission, and they're organized. And they have become identified as an internal insurgent group to be surveilled by the FBI. And this is, they were designated as radical organized librarians. And this was because of the active opposition to the Patriot Act and their surveillance provisions of it, which invaded the privacy of library patrons. So almost alone, perhaps with the exception of the military justice system and later on the American judicial system, they opposed the Patriot Act. So they're very powerful people. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank, so much. That is true, and you write about that.
I do write about that because they believe in the Constitution. I mean, they are very much following the laws. This is also very important to librarians. But when they were asked in one of these national security letters to secretly hand over their patrons' computer searches, the librarians that I profiled, who were part of a consortium in Connecticut, said, "I don't think so. I think this is not right." And they filed suit with the Attorney General and went through an unbelievable year of being gagged and secretly having not, they weren't even able to tell their spouses that they were involved in this challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It was fascinating.
Hmm.
1984 time.
And there is, when you look at the mission, too, one of the missions of libraries, as you write about, these are places where you go and you learn and you form opinions, and they're private. These are private places.
Well, you go to a library, if you get a bad diagnosis, you can go to the library and confidentially tell the reference librarian.
Yes.
And ask for help in guiding you toward resources.
Yes.
If you are out of work, you can go to your local library and say, "Where can I go for help? How can I get retrained on a computer? How do I get resume services?" They are ideal for this kind of thing, and they respect your privacy. They won't go telling your neighbors.
Right. Thank you, Frank, so much for your call. June is next from Milwaukee. Hi, June.
Hi. I think I'm basically going to almost reiterate what Frank said, but I think what librarians have is a great skill and ability to see connections. They're organized. Now, I'm an intelligent person, but if you put me in charge of a library, I would destroy it because I can't see the connections. I don't know where this goes or that goes. But I see them being able to say, all right, you know, as you were talking about earlier, why don't you pull this tab down and click here kind of thing, that they provide a wonderful service because we have so much information. We are over-information people that they can put it into sections for us. You can say, well, this connects to that, to that, to that. Why don't you check here, here, and here? And I think that's a wonderful service that they offer our society.
When you don't know what you don't know, when you don't know how to phrase the question, it is they are remarkably skilled. I think they're as skilled as psychiatrists at, you know, ferreting out what it is you really need or want to know.
Yes. Thank you very much for the call. We go to Sandra from West Allis next. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Thank you for this. I like your shows on librarians because I'm a retired librarian.
All right. This one's for you, Sandra.
And when I first started working, I was intrigued by the characters that the librarians were. They were very fascinating people, the first ones I worked with, and all along, of course. And then seeing online searching come in was fantastic. And I've since retired. And then on your comment how busy some of the librarians are, especially these small libraries where people run the whole thing, one day just in a bigger library, I had three computers, a telephone, and a line in front of me, and this man used the old saw. He said, "Do you do Windows also?"
And you said, "Of course, I'm sure you probably
right,
did."
Right.
What attracted you to the profession, Sandra?
Actually, a friend of mine, I was sort of floundering. It was right after when college was ending, and she said she was going to library school, and that just hit a bell. And years ago, there was a librarian at West Dallas Public Library, Miss Paulus, and some other really good librarians, and I'd always go and ask for another cat book to the children's librarian. And she endlessly would find me a cat book. So when my friend said that, it just clicked in my head. That was it. And I love the online searching myself. I just love doing that.
So how long were you a librarian?
I started in 66. I retired in 2004.
Oh, my.
Wow.
A long time. You've seen
you saw some changes.
Oh, big ones, right.
So you had to get up to speed in terms of technology, et cetera.
Right. And you could look at Library of Congress catalog online. There's so many things, you know, you could correspond with the British Museum Library. When all that came through so quickly, you could always write letters before, but this was speed, and it was unbelievable what you could do.
Do you go to libraries now?
A little bit, not too much, but I read endlessly. One of my friends brings me a lot of books from the library she retired from. So I just read, and I make notes from your shows, the various shows all of you have.
You do?
Uh-huh, and I try to follow up on some of the books and read them. This one I definitely will.
Oh, that's great, Sandra. I have you pictured. I think this is good. I'm so glad you called in.
Well, like I said, thank you for featuring librarians, and thank you for writing the book.
Thanks very much for your call. You know, you listen to, I don't want to be too general about this, but you do have the sense, because you know they'll respect your privacy and because of what libraries hold, they hold all ideas, mm-hmm. that you can trust librarians.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trust
mm-hmm.
thing going on, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think they're very good at that. They're discreet, and they are, and respectful, and smart, and they get it. We like all of these things.
Right. Respectful and smart. And they deal with all kinds of people, because people, if they're down and out, people if they're lonely, people if they're homeless, actually, are on the steps mm-hmm. of libraries and sitting in places reading books. It is an incredibly accepting place to be.
Yes, it is. And I like the libraries that actually have engraved above their door, free to all.
Yes.
Not just the taxpayers here, all.
Yes. Along with statues of Benjamin Franklin. That's always good.
Yes.
Yeah. So who is this? This is, I believe, although you've got a whole host of favorites, one of the more interesting women who you write about, Henrietta, how do you pronounce her last name? Avram?
Henriette Avram.
Avram.
Yes. Oh, she was she really maybe was the first person whose obituary made me think, these people are people that I have to run after. This was a woman, she was not technically a librarian, but she's a hero to librarians. She was a systems analyst who was hired by the Library of Congress and took all of their card catalogs and turned it into computer code. And she had a staff of people who just adored her and a following of people, very technically oriented, women in particular, but men too, who saw library science suddenly as being just a wonderful frontier if they were interested in computers.
Hmm.
And a big shift happened after that. But she was, you know, her obituary, I'll just add this. There was a line in it talking about the intricacies and complexities of cataloging. And it said, you know, some of these intricacies are not written down. It's passed on from one class of catalogers to another. And that really lit the light in my head. If it's not written down, I'm interested.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, as we're talking here, I think about the set of skills that librarians have. One is that they're just incredibly curious about what's going on, and they're voracious readers. And then you also have, and particularly now, this set of highly technical skills. In some ways, when I think about it, those don't seem to go together. Do they for you? Maybe they do.
I think it's a rare person who is both very good at dealing with people, and not just people, but the public, which can
be
challenging.
Yes, mm-hmm. The public.
And dealing with the structure of information, which is, I agree with the caller who said, you know, I'd make a big mess of it. I personally would make a huge mess of it.
So would I. So would I. Let's go to Kay from Maquanago next. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I just have a couple comments about the sense of community that librarians, I think, engender. my favorite library is Waterford, Wisconsin, and I just can't say enough about the people who work there and how kind they are, and always calling you if you need, you know, if you leave your number about something, they call you back. If you forget to bring a book back, you know, you don't have to go online. If you're busy, they'll just do it over the phone. It's kind of like years ago with the party line. And the other library that I find very nice is over in Eagle. It's a very, very tiny room. And that librarian, I don't know her name, but she's always thinking of ways to bring people together. She had a woman come in on Sunday afternoon and do something on gardening, a woman out this way who has written a book on it. And then on Valentine's Day, she had a new author come in who is from Toronto and talk to us about her book and about ecology matters. And she gets about 25 or 30 people on a Sunday afternoon. And it just brings people together. And I just think these little libraries are the best thing since sliced bread.
That's wonderful. And
that's
I
kind
think
of my comment. Thank you for the program.
Thank you so much for the call. Well, let's talk about some more libraries then. We've talked about Deadwood. Let's talk about some of your favorites, because we do, when you think about them in your life, there are, you can remember them. I haven't thought about libraries in terms of what the rooms were like or the books or the people I knew, but they are vivid. It's like your favorite teachers.
Yes. And I've been to some great libraries, spectacular spaces, unbelievable collections, gorgeous rooms, you know, wonderful librarians. My favorite libraries, though, are like the callers, the ones that I know where I walk in the door and their faces light up when they see me.
Oh.
And I feel like I belong to a community of people who care about the written word.
Right.
That's pretty special.
Yes, very special. And what about special libraries? The book also talks about, some of these are kind of strange, but you take us into the American Kennel Club Library. You talk about a Las Vegas gentleman's club called The Library.
Well, that's not a library, of course.
Why would they call it The Library, though?
It's actually a subset of pornography. I hope I don't shock any of your listeners to say that there are some people out there who really are very turned on by the idea of librarians, and you can find some pretty eyebrow-raising things featuring, you know, I mean, these are not real librarians, but
right.
The idea of librarians, and so you know, the women in these pictures wear glasses and have their hair done up in buns, and, you know.
And that's all.
That's
what they wear. And what's the turn on here? What's the...
Well, we don't really know. I don't really know. I think, you know, my theory is that because librarians are discreet, and because if you stand in front of them and say, I would like to see X, Y, and Z shocking things, they will keep a poker face. They're trained not to express themselves or disapproval at what you ask. And I think that makes them kind of mysterious.
And they know a lot, right? I mean, you just
and
have
they know
this,
a lot,
they know
right?
A lot. You know,
that's right. That's
are
right.
Are there a lot of organizations, and tell me about some of them, that do have their own libraries, the library for dogs or cats or the library for space? I would imagine there are a lot of specialty libraries.
There are a lot of specialty libraries, and, you know, this is a very tough time for libraries. So
yes.
Many places that have had thriving libraries are really... you know, we're seeing them cut back. And we mentioned the American Kennel Club Library, which is this darling library in New York City. And everyone who comes to the Westminster Dog Show trots over to see it. Anybody who wants to know about dogs, any aspect of dogs, or read old, rare books about dogs, or ask about a breed, can visit this library. The wonderful librarian that I followed around there has it no longer works there. They're trying to run the library without a full-time librarian because times are so tough. So, yes, there are marvelous little libraries everywhere. They're presidential libraries, of course.
Yes.
and you can discover them, you know, to your heart's content and grab them quickly before before our economy chases some of them out of existence.
Oh, that's a sad thought. Is there, I know you're a cat person, are there cat libraries?
I haven't run across one yet, but as soon as we say this, I'm sure the lines will light up because there seems to be a library and there seems to be a librarian for
everything.
I mean, I found a you know what fantasy football is?
Yes, I do.
There's a fantasy football librarian.
No.
And she's hung up her shingle on the web. I kid you not. And if you have a fantasy football team and would like a, you know, trained librarian's help to get the edge.
Oh, you're letting out a secret here.
Yeah,
Marilyn.
You can go visit her blog and she'll help you out.
Whew. Dick from Waukesha is our next caller. Hi, Dick.
Yes, we're back to multitudinous. That's a wonderful word. It ought to be in the dictionary. But I have an Upper Peninsula story that fits in there. A friend lived up there, and he had his work done at a local garage. The father was a mechanic, and he had two sons, 18 and 19, who handled tires and gas while he was gone. Well, a man came in. This probably was just after World War II. And said his engine was making strange noises, and could you look at it? So they tried to raise the hood, and he said, no, the engine's in the rear. Well, they'd never seen a rear engine car, and went back, and he opened the cover, and they looked at that, and then they had a little whispered conversation. And the older one says, I'm sorry, mister. He said, we can't do nothing about that. It's too duplicated. For us, you have to wait till our father comes back from work. Not duplicated, duplicated. Shouldn't that be in the dictionary?
Yes, I like
indeed.
It.
Adam.
I like that too.
I was trying to shave and wash up and go deliver meals on wheels when you were telling that story, so I had to sit down for a minute.
Let them wait for their food.
It was too duplicated.
Be on your way, Dick.
Yep, thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
And tell some of these stories when you're delivering those meals. That sounds like a good way to spend this day. Esty from Madison, hi.
Hi. Going back to what your guest was just saying about libraries closing because of the bad economy, I just wanted to say that this Americans may not be aware of just how lucky they are to have this amazing system of free public libraries all over the place. I grew up in Israel, and there were no public libraries, even though Israelis love to read.
Really? There weren't any libraries? I'm surprised.
Well, there were libraries, but they were private.
Oh.
And I, as a child, was lucky to have very literate parents who registered me to one of them and paid the fees, and I loved books, so every 2-3 days I hopped on the bus and took the 3 books that I was done with and back to the library and went and got the next 3. It was also limited in how many you could take, and the librarian there, of course, took a liking to a child who loved to read so much, and before long she was saying, you know, you enjoyed this book, I think you might enjoy that book, why don't you try reading this author, and I'm really grateful for this show today, because I haven't thought in a long time about that particular librarian and really how important she was, I think, in getting me interested in so many things that I may not have looked at.
Yes.
If not for her. So that's, it's just one thing that I think people should be very grateful for, to have that available regardless of their economic situation. I also want to say that recently I went to my public library here in Madison and asked the librarian about a film DVD that I was taking out, and I was wondering if it's the same one that I took some time before. And he said, well, ma'am, we don't keep track of what you take. And I said, oh, but then how would Bush know what I read? I don't know if he, I don't know if he didn't understand or whatever, but he said, I'm sorry, ma'am, we just don't keep track, because if we do, then the government might at some point want to see what you read, and we don't think that that is their business, so we don't keep track. And I said, well, thank you very much. One last thing is, just last night I was talking to a man who is not a librarian, but he delivers for the library system, and he told me how nowadays I can get MP3 books on MP3s, and they come in an MP3 player, which I can just take with me anywhere and listen to the books. And I thought, you know, again, they are way ahead of me. You know, I wouldn't have thought
right.
that there was such a thing, and there is, and you can get it for free. So, you know, wonderful thing.
It is a wonderful thing. It is a wonderful thing. Marilyn, your response.
I think libraries are the foundation of our democracy. The idea that anybody can learn anything if they're motivated is so American. It's so, you know, build yourself up, you know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. And I think there's a growing digital divide in this country, and I see it being played out any number of ways. Those who can afford computers and the latest devices are, you know, going to be able to compete with the world. And those who don't have access to these things, unless they have a public library near them that can give them that kind of power and access, you know, we don't want a society. We don't want a society where there are just haves and have-nots. We don't want that. And so in the community that I lived in New York, the generation of women ahead of me said, we need to have a library, and they got it built. And they went around collecting signatures, and it was an important value. It's where the community expresses itself. This is what we care about. We care about a place where our children can learn, and learn at their own pace, and be entertained in a positive way. A community center. We care about ideas of the mind. We care about our own local history. All those things get manifest in a local public library. And you bet it's one of the greatest things about this country. And, you know, it's a good time for us to go out there and say that, because budgets are being cut right and left. And there are people who think that libraries are luxuries. You know?
Right. How could they possibly think that?
It's really not right up there with some of the other services that we have to fund, and I couldn't disagree more. I think it's really, you know, there are people who are getting jobs because they go to the library and ask the librarian for help.
Right, right. They are taught how to use the internet in some cases, how to find job listings.
How can you go searching for a job and apply? Some of these jobs you can only apply for them online.
Right.
And there are government agencies now that it's, you know, it's all moving online. And, you know, if you don't know how to work the mouse, how do I make the mouse move?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are questions that some people have. You know, a lot of, you know, my parents were not really up with computers at all. And it thrills me that they can go to their local library and there are classes for seniors in how to use the computer.
We're going to take more phone calls for Marilyn. Our guest this hour is Marilyn Johnson, and her book is This Book is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls, Betty from Oak Creek, hello.
Well, thank you for taking my call. What an interesting program, which is always every day interesting. I had a niece that she had a college degree, but the job she had was, she didn't really care for it, but she liked to read. And she checked into being a librarian. Well, she went back to Indianapolis, and she went to the university, and she was hired for the Eli Lilly Medical Library. There is such a shortage, she said, of librarians. And she said, like, in Washington, D.C., and also these medical colleges and these medical libraries. And she said, it's just a vast number of libraries that don't have the qualified employees. And I think sometimes there's a lot of people that like to read, but they never think of being a librarian.
Marilyn.
I think probably in the specialized library fields, this is the case, medical and legal librarians. But I have to say, I know a lot of librarians who are looking for work right now, because so many staff positions are being cut and state aid is drying up really across the board. I would hesitate to send somebody down this road thinking that there's a guaranteed job on the other end. But medical librarians, you bet, people who have who are really know the specialty and sort of go beyond the basic MLIS, I would imagine that they're very lucrative employees to have.
Thank you, Betty, so much for your call. Lori is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Lori.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much. I just want to say a couple of things. As a young child came up in a kind of abusive household and was raised partially in Greenwood, Mississippi. At the time, it was the segregated South. And when the Black Library came, it was just a joy to the whole community. You just don't know how much it brought. I was able to save my soul and my life by reading it. Just did so much for me. And as she had spoken earlier about people having infatuations and loves for librarians, that started at that time.
Mm.
Because the page and the written word and the smell of the book and being able to immerse yourself and lose yourself in that word and imagine a different life in which you were living, it was just wondrous. And I just want to say thank you for the book. Thank you for being a librarian. I still call my Ready Reference almost all the time. I refer all the time, but kind of hurt by what I heard the last time I called. They're not using the term Ready Reference anymore. This is at the Central Library downtown. They're having to answer the phone for 14 libraries to keep their positions. And the slight anger or angst in the librarians' voices as you call can be heard. It's a painful thing. It's a transition I think I never thought I'd see, but it is what it is. And I have had the joy of working in libraries as a young girl before becoming an adult, and just loved everything about it, still do, still go. And I'm such an avid reader. People bring me books and put them on my desk at work, and I don't know where they appear from.
That's so nice. Yeah, I haven't thought of the words Ready Reference. I used to use them all the time. I think probably because of computers. I use computers more in searches. But what a great service that had been. Oh. Ready Reference.
286-3011.
I love it. What was the number?
286-3011 is Ready Reference's number.
You've got it on the top of your head. I love
God,
it.
Oh, God, my whole life.
Oh.
But thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Lori. And that is true about libraries, maybe for librarians, but certainly for lots of people who use them. They were a way to escape a life that you were in and to move you toward a new one.
It's incredible. There are so many stories like that, and it warms my heart every time I hear it. It is where you can transform your life. You can learn about anything, and you can time travel there.
Right. You can time travel.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that? Tell us the story. What was the book that you were looking for what is that? Sorry, I can't even remember the name of the book now.
I was looking for a novel called Easy Travel to Other Planets.
Right. Travel to Other Planets. You were going to take a trip, right?
Right. Talk about time traveling.
Right.
It was a book that had impressed me very much as a young adult for several reasons, one of which was characters in it were subject to something called information sickness. It was set slightly in the future, and every once in a while, people would be walking down the street, and they would just be so overwhelmed by information that they would start raving like lunatics and bleeding from the nose and ears. And I thought this was like a perfect, I wanted the exact description of how the very talented author Ted Mooney had described this. And I can't find my copy of the book in my very messy home library. And so I sent the New York Public Library librarians off looking for it. And I found the passage, and it was just as fabulous as I remembered.
Oh, I hope you posted it on the refrigerator so you'll never lose it again.
I put it in my book.
There you go. You'll never lose it again. Thank you, Lori, so much for your call. Roger from Lone Rock. Hi, Lori. Roger, hi.
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to tell you what we're doing at our library. We have, with a small town in southwest Wisconsin, less than 900 people, and one of the things we're doing this summer, it started last summer, a volunteer gardener is helping the library. We're doing, this year, expanding an edible landscaping demonstration garden on the library grounds, and all of the produce that's harvested from it is available for the patrons to take home.
Oh, nice. What a great idea.
Where do I move?
Lone Rock, Wisconsin, Marilyn.
That's right. You know, I'm coming to Wisconsin in November.
Are you?
Yes, I'm going to speak to the Wisconsin Library Association for their annual meeting.
Are you?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Well, come and see. Where is it? Do you know? In Madison?
It's in the Wisconsin Dells.
Okay.
And it's November 3rd. It's on my schedule, and I'm really eager to. Apparently, there are some fabulous librarians that I have to meet.
Oh, yes. There are so many of them. Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll do another interview with you down the road, then. That'd be great. Diane from Elroy. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I have an experience that I would like to share. And are you still there?
Of course.
Okay. I've had wonderful experiences with librarians, but I had three that were very perplexing to me. One in Crystal Falls, Michigan, another in Taylorville, Illinois, and another in Elroy, Wisconsin. My mother, who was a voracious reader, passed away, and her library of books were too many to add to my library of books. And I thought, okay, well, I'll donate them to a library. And the libraries wouldn't take them. And they were in excellent condition, had whole collections of topics, you know. And I'm thinking, why? Why wouldn't they take them?
Hmm.
Well, you might want to ask them, but I find it, you know, I have a lot of books that I try to give away to libraries, and sometimes their shelves are full. And they have patrons who have specific interests that they are trying to respond to. The libraries that I know in my area, though, are now serving as places, donation centers. So they'll have an annual Friends of the Library sale for the books that they don't want to keep themselves, or they will be supplying shelters and prisons and hospitals with the books that the people in the community can't use. I mean, it's a heartbreaking thing when you think of an intact, excellent condition, you know, lovingly
right.
collected library floating down the river and not finding a home. It breaks my heart. But I mean, in the age of computers, when you can send word of something like that out there, on the networks, I think you have a much greater chance of finding a home for something like that.
Well, in the end, we did have an auction of her belongings, and the books went into the auction. And of course, they were sold for like next to nothing, you know.
Ouch.
And then these were like Time Life collection, a 23-book collection of boating, for instance.
Oh.
You know, really beautiful books, but somebody got them, you know, who wanted
right.
them and for a song, and that was okay, too. It's just that I just wondered, you know, why, you know.
Well, the people who collect books, it's like their identity is in them. I mean, you know, there's really the difference in the collections from one library to the next always interests me because, you know, if they're public libraries, of course they'll have John Grisham, you know, and they'll have the latest cookbook or diet book. They'll have some of the same things. But the ways that a community expresses itself in, you know, with a fabulous gardening collection or, you know, a wonderful couple of shells of local authors, you really can read someone's personality or a community's personality by reading these books,
right,
the spines of them.
Yes. Oh, this has been such a wonderful hour. Thank you, Marilyn, very much for your book.
Thank you,
and
Kathleen,
for being with us. And to all of our marvelous callers, too. You're just the best. And please be in touch with us. We'd love to hear more about your appearance in Wisconsin, and we'd like to do another hour here. It would
great.
Be great fun.
I'd love to. Well, thank you so much, Kathleen. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Marilyn. So have I. Marilyn Johnson, our guest this hour. She is the author of This Book Is Overdue, How Librarians and Cybrarians Can Save Us All. Special thanks to Rhonda Fanning, who, as you know, is a librarian and makes this show fly. So thanks to Rhonda for producing the hour. And for being a librarian, thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thank you for all of your very great calls. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Much more ahead here on the Ideas Network.